everybody. This is Again With This, episode 53. Let's read about Shannon Daugherty. Yeah, sure. In her December 1991 17 cover story. Professional.
Sorry, Dave. Who plays Brenda on 90210?
Shando.
Yes. Good. Also, it doesn't matter because we have no Patreon supporters after the last episode. I'm so sorry, you guys. All two of you who are left, hello. I'm your co-host, Sarah T. Bunting. I am here with David T. Cole and Tara Ariano. Hello.
Hello.
Occasionally on Again With This, we like to take a break from the Melrosing and harken back to the show that started it all in a magazine exegesis. That's right, exegesis. Well, $10 word. Y'all Patreon supporters don't need to pay $10 for it. Any level of support lets you join us for this and every other episode of this podcast. And we thank you so much again, if you're still here after all the Tom Scotting. We are very appreciative of the support and of your emotional support. As we wend our way back to the fashion and the tendency of the culture to care what Brian Austin Green has to say about anything of the early 90s. This is the December 1991 17 cover story featuring Shando. So I think we're going to begin with that cover story and then wend our way through the rest of the magazine. There's also some side content about the dudes on the show and an extremely important quiz about knowing your friends that Tara and I will be taking with and for each other. But let's start with Shando. Tara, do you want to kick us off with your thoughts on the cover story?
Sure. It's called Shannon Gets Real. The star of TV's coolest show, Beverly Hills 90210, claims she's just a normal 20-year-old girl. Call us suspicious, but we had to find out what Shannon Daugherty is really like. And the lead is, somehow the word has gotten out that Beverly Hills 90210 is filming on location at the Palace Costume Company in Hollywood. That's where they go to get their costumes for the season 2 Halloween / date rape episode.
Oh.
Which is exciting. Yeah. I would say the photos are very good throughout. There's on the third page in, we get Shando in a black column dress leading a horse on a beach. It's very editorial. Then she's also got a Bardot moment with the sunglasses. And we should say there's visual aids for this. You can follow along as we're talking about it. And that's very adorable. There's also a shot of her in like a red short puffer coat, which is a bit catalog for me.
Yeah, I agree. There's one with her in a leather motorcycle jacket that it's like, edge or like punch up your punky look or something that Lucky Magazine would have said about it. Take it from a tryhard who had one of those from the Army Navy store. It's a little tryhardy. It's a little like, I just feel like you saw that in fashion editorial constantly at that time, the like black moto jacket over the tutu or whatever.
Right. I mean, this is also, this would have come out just a couple of months after we saw Emily Valentine in it on her first day of school. So.
Yep.
So they also quote Shannon saying, if I said I got along with everyone on the set, I'd be lying, which I appreciate her candor. I don't think it serves anyone to be like, no, we're all best friends and we watch the show together at each other's houses, blah, blah, blah. But it's also so early in the run for her to be this honest in the press. Like, just, you don't have to be 100% frank about stuff like this.
Yeah, just maybe be like, everyone's great. I'm closer with some people than others, which yeah. I guess technically would be true.
Yes.
Yeah.
We also got a reference to her boyfriend, Chris. No last name.
No last name.
Chris Foofus. Put some respect on his dumb name, 17.
Right? I was gratified to see that she already had three giant dogs.
Yep.
On brand. Excellent.
And in the little tease at the front of the book, just to like a little editor's note about this article, there's a reference to how much she ate, which also came up in her YM, which we talked about. A few, again with this is back, but that was like the year after this. So I don't know if she really is a big eater or if that was just something that she did in interviews so that they would say she was. I mean, who knows?
Or this is just something that they did with actresses to try to, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the play is.
Right.
with that, but certainly in Vanity Fair at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, here's what they ordered. They ate all of it. Then they smoked, whatever, 65 Marlboro Lights, which was also in the Vanity Fair article. Probably not going to be in 17.
No, well, I mean, we'll get to it in the boy story, which we might as well move on to. Anything else to say about the Shando cover? It's very short.
No, not really. It was more substantive than some that we've covered on the show, I think. At certain points in the show's run, like, it was like, we're going to put them on the cover because we have the rights to the photo, but it's going to be like 50 words on whoever it is. But, you know, it's Shando. Like, it's not really that substantive. It's just like fluffy.
Yeah. It's this fine. Is about half a column more than we got on Andrew Hsu, but it's filled out with a lot of photos, which makes sense.
Yeah. And she was clearly having fun with those. So.
Yes. I mean, they also say in that editor's note that she loved everything they picked out for her and wanted to buy it all. So great.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So we also get a story about the boys of 90210.
Oh, God.
The zip in 90210. Here are the four best reasons to stay home on Thursday nights. I'm just going to read this lead because it is insane.
If you can get through it without laughing, I salute you.
Here's your chance to vote for your favorite hillbilly. Who do you love? Jazzy Jason, Cool Hand Luke, Brainy Brian, or I Am the Lion?
Jazzy Jason. Like, guys, just use their first names.
Yeah, I guess this isn't actually the lead. It's like a sidebar. There's a contest where you can call in and say who you love the most. But, Brainy Brian.
Yeah, and also, like, Cool Hand Luke. What a Phyllis-y reference for this hip togs magazine to make.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So we get a little box about each of the dudes. The Jason Priestley one is the longest. So let's go in the order that they appear on the page, starting with Brian Austin Green. They describe him as a freshman, but he was not. By the time this issue came out in December 91, he was a sophomore. So makes you wonder how long a lead this piece had.
Yeah, or how much they actually cared about David, which, fair.
Yeah. I mean, with the rest of them, they could be like, no, they're juniors again. But it's very clearly established in the first season that he's a freshman. So the next year, he's definitely not a freshman anymore.
Yeah.
You know? No. The interviewer also talks about how funny he is, which I don't believe it.
No. And based on this evidence, he pretty clearly isn't, but he thinks he is. And he's one of those actors for whom that's like a thing, capital T. And it's quickly clear to the writer for a teen magazine that you just got to go with it so that you get the interview and you can leave and file. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we've all been there, so.
It's true. Next, Ian Ziering, who the writer says is her favorite actor she's ever interviewed. And I actually do believe he's fun to talk to.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is someone who has always had a slightly better developed sense of his place in the Zipposphere.
Yeah. Luke Perry. The writer editorializes, aren't Libras supposed to be romantic? And Sarah is our astrology expert. Are they?
God. I actually know like two. Uh-huh. So I don't know.
Sure? One of those is my dad. So careful.
Okay. So I know three. Another one is our esteemed colleague, Kim Reed. Hi, Kim.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that was their reputation, but also, like, again, I just don't know so many that I'd have a developed idea of what they're supposed to be.
Sure. So then Jason Priestley, we are told he was goofing around dancing between takes, but Brandon doesn't dance. And when we see Brandon do it, we know it's because Jason can't dance. So I was surprised to read that was something that he did to blow off steam between takes.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that was not actually happening, and they left it in. It was going to be what they said about him before our next item, and then it like didn't get cut when they decided to include that, because anyway, let's move on to the next item and I'll explain my crackpot theory.
Okay. So they dox him as a smoker. And doing that on the pages of 17 this early in the show's run is shady, which makes me think he must have been a dick, because otherwise that, yeah. they would have kept that to themselves.
Yeah. And that's why I feel like the dancing was like, all right, are we going to out him with this? Let's see if he turns it around and is less of an uncooperative dick. And I guess he wasn't, but the dancing stayed in.
Right. So we also hear about a time when he was interviewed by kid reporters and laughs. It says he laughs at the story, baffled that anyone would want to know how big his feet are. My guess, lady six.
Yeah, I think so. he is wee. He also notes about like sort of alternative timelines of his career, that he's like, hanging around a jazz club with a goatee would be cool. No, it wouldn't. None of those things.
No. Yeah. All right. Shall we talk about the rest of the issue?
Sure.
Okay. Well, we get an editor's letter from the redoubtable Midge Turk Richardson, former nun turned 17 editor at this time, was like well into middle age. And she writes, there's a story in the issue about makeup for people who aren't white, basically. And she writes, on the racial makeup of the population, one out of every four Americans is African-American, Asian, Hispanic, Native American, ellipsis, or somewhere in between. Oh, no, no, no. Don't say that. That's not, no. It's not a good way to put it, ma'am.
No. No.
Awkward.
Yeah. And it's the editor's letter, so... Mm. I mean, you would think maybe the executive editor would like sneak in at 5:04 and be like, but
yeah,
did not occur.
No.
On page 9, there is an ad for CoverGirl Navy, which like was a like Madelinian experience. Mm-hmm. Like, not that I could smell it, but I was like, oh yeah, I wore that for a while, a couple years.
Yeah, I remember that scent.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
And then I think I moved on to the Calvin Klein phase, which all of this says a lot about me, and none of it is good.
We also get a column or a fashion story called Icebreakers. And one of them is just you'll see it in the visual aids. We see her from the back and she's sort of turning around, and it looks like her hands are probably on her belt. But it looks like she is in the middle of peeing standing up with a urination device.
Yeah. It's a shame, too, because I really want that sweater.
Mm-hmm. There's also an ad just to situate you in time. 2-page spread for Hypercolor.
Yeah, I was like, this is really 90s. Like, I think I didn't see the Hypercolor part at first. And I was like, wow, they're trying really hard to make this, like, you know, urban skate chic. And I was like, oh fuck, oh. It's Hypercolor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
There's a hair story on page 24 called Ready to Roll, and which I have nothing to say about, you know, making yourself a big hairstyle, like fine, but we just don't talk enough about the fact that the hair device known as a rat, made famous in the Look at Me, I'm Sandra Dee song from Grease. I don't drink, I don't swear, I don't wrap my hair. It really makes these bun instructions disgusting. To wit, roll hair from ends to roots around an oblong rat. I don't believe I will. Yuck.
Yeah. As a native New Jerseyan to whom a rat was issued at birth, just kidding. I agree. Like, it's so funny that it's still being called just straight out a rat.
Yeah.
In an editorial magazine. Also, the model they use, like, they've given her this Elaine Benes bump that is not... The model has a rather distinctive lantern jaw situation. Mm-hmm. It is just not a good fit. It just looks like one of those draft, like the draft ducks that you put on the door to keep the wind out.
Yeah.
They just rolled the hair around that and put it on her head. It's not cute.
Yeah. Then we have a double page spread ad for Exclamation, which in our notes, I've called it Queen of the Drugstore Sense. That was one I knew a lot of my friends wore, but you have another contender.
I do. Like, I agree. And I remember that the display stands very clearly, but I also remember that they were right next to the Jeanette.
Oh, yeah.
And I was a Jeanette girl before Navy. I was a Gina Tay girl, and I feel like that is maybe the queen of the drugstore sense. But listeners, vote, weigh in, let us know.
There's definitely, like, Gina Tay was the one where it's like everyone's mother had it. Like, much as you were issued a rat at birth, I think everyone's mom in the hospital, like, before they released them from the maternity ward, they're like, and here's your Gina Tay. Like, I remember my mother having it, never remember her using it or smelling like it.
Yeah, I think that's where I got my first bottle was, like, someone, and that's the other thing, like, it's something that kids get their mom for Mother's Day, because it's like the day before and you're at the drugstore and you're like, well, it's perfume. Doesn't smell bad. That and Cody.
Oh, yeah. Cody Wild Musk.
Yeah. And Love's Baby Soft also in the conversation.
Yes.
Although that just smelled like a scented tampon to me. And I was like, yeah, that was not.
Yeah.
Not about it. Big advertiser in this issue, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think Love's Baby Soft is what everyone wore until the Body Shop came out with the perfume oils.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those with the little, like, stick?
Oh, yeah. I had those. Blackberry. Believe it.
Vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Because I read in some one of these fucking magazines that boys like it when you smell like a cookie, and I believed it.
Yeah. I think you and I had a long conversation about that on the telephone when we were first becoming friends, as we used to be before what will now be known as the Jazz Incident. What was I going to say? Were you a Gap scent person?
No.
Okay.
But yeah, I like them. I just never wore
them. For a while.
Yeah.
Speaking of ads, there's also an ad for the Vampire Diaries, the book, which I don't think I knew the property existed that far back. But then it's sort of like, hasn't the CW show been on since like Bush was president, like the first one? I mean, you know, it's not that old, but I was surprised.
I was too. I knew it had been a book, but I figured it was a book from like the 2000s.
Yeah, same.
Then on page 40, social studies, the headline is "When the Chemistry's Not There," with a byline from Ann Patchett. And I was like, that Ann Patchett who wrote Bel Canto? And then I looked it up. It's that Ann Patchett. We'll link to this article in the show notes because it's like she just talks about her career starting with 17 magazine. She now owns an independent bookstore, Sarah. She's copying you. I mean, I think she probably did it first, but you are kindred sisters.
I graciously accept this honor.
If you don't know Bel Canto, she also wrote a little personal history article in The New Yorker recently about her mother's three husbands. At her at an event and taking a picture with all three of them, thinking, you know, they're probably going to start dying soon. And one of them saying while they were taking it, like, you understand what she's doing, right? She's going to take this picture and then she's going to write about us. And then the next paragraph is like, he was right. I did. Hello. So you can tell from the lead of this story. So when you see it in the visual aids, you don't need to read the whole article, but like just the first paragraph, it's like, oh, this woman is destined for greater things than just writing for 17. Not that there's anything wrong with writing for 17, but it's clear she has a flair.
It's a very different, I mean, look, I wrote an article for 17. That money was good. How to pass your driver's test. Not much to it. Don't crash into anything. It's good advice. but yeah, you will be able to tell immediately if you're like, it can't be the same Ann Patchett. It is. You'll be able to tell.
Indeed. So then on Hot Talk, which is just a bunch of little newsy items, there's one called Couch Rock. Letting us know we should get ready to tune into the latest in cable consumption, the Entertainment Club. Still in the planning stages, the Rock and Shop channel is the brainchild of the people who manage Bon Jovi and Skid Row. I was like, did this ever happen? I could not find any evidence on the internet that it did. And this is probably in like the last dead zone where it's like, if it didn't get into like the New York Times, it's not going to come up, but it also just may have never happened.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know, Shopping Network or QVC were like, a word.
Or they were just like, oh, we'll do that and did.
Yeah.
So then on page 53, we have talent. This is like a various pop culture items, music, theater, etc. There's a tease. While on hiatus from Growing Pains, newlyweds Kirk Cameron and Chelsea Noble made Honor Bright for NBC. He plays a nice guy trying to set up a home for his mentally disabled sister and some mistreated kids. It's all for a good cause, but the FBI charges him with kidnapping, and Chelsea is the friendly girl next door. Now, if you know anything about Kirk Cameron, you know he married her, and then he was like, I am not doing any love scenes with any woman who is not my wife from now on. But this thing is on YouTube in pieces under a different name. We'll link it in the show notes. Juicy Smollett is in it, as is blind date host Roger Lodge as an FBI agent. It's called, it was released as A Little Bit of Heaven.
Very little bits, all strung together.
Little piece of heaven, excuse me. Very little pieces.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Yeah.
I can't believe he's still a going concern in some corner of culture. Anyway.
Well, yeah. The apocalyptic corner.
Indeed. Talent continues to page 56 with an item called The Ball Boys. This is about...
Sure.
A MTV Rock and Jock basketball event where apparently Donnie Wahlberg got booed. Harsh. Ooh, 91? Yeah. They had already turned on him? So cold.
Yeah. That's nuts. Mark apparently was also at this.
Really?
Event. Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, Mark. I thought you meant our friend Mark. Like, that seems off brand, but I don't know. Maybe it happened in Tennessee. I don't know.
Also, yeah. Also, we would have heard about that by now.
Probably.
Yeah.
So Luke Perry was also one of the players. And I have to ask Sarah, as a college basketball fan, do you think he was good?
Yeah, I think he, for his height, probably was pretty good. He seemed like a guy who cared about the game and was a student of it and cared about fundamentals, which when you're short, you have to. So he would concentrate on drill shit like bounce passes and probably was in this environment when a lot of other people were, I'm going to say, drunk and high. He was probably relatively good. Yeah.
The other thing to consider about his height is if he's playing against other celebrities, they're probably also all short.
Yeah. Then he's Kareem. Totally.
Then we have on page 78 that cross-cultural color story that we referred to earlier, which was shot by Andrew Southam, cheating on Sassy.
Oh.
We've mentioned Listen to Sassy before, our sister podcast. He has shot the cover of every issue that we've talked about so far, plus a bunch of other stories as well. So, hey.
Yeah, there was a certain... I mean, there's a certain look to like teen editorial at this time that is driven sort of by like the colors that are available. Like in this story, it's sort of like that acid pink and acid green color. And then there's like, you know, crazy primary color blocking. So I, for one, can sometimes like feel like it's all of a piece. But this would make it make more sense that this looked a little more like Sassy editorial photos then.
Yeah, I agree.
Than usual. So it's the December issue. So there's a lot of like shopping, servicey stuff.
Gift guides. Yeah.
So the next thing, well, not the next thing, but it's on page 90. It's called Not Just For Him. And basically it's like, here's a gift guide of stuff that you can, you know, spend some bank on, but then steal it from or slash borrow it from your boyfriend. Like, okay, I see you.
I'm not against it.
But there are these striped button downs right at the top center of the page that are extreme. It's like a vertical stripe in sort of this bright sea blue. Very 90s. They look really cheap. It's something Jim Walsh would wear, not Brandon, to just sort of place that in the universe. And they're $48, which like in 91, that price point seems a bit high for a teenager.
Yeah. I agree. This is also, this is something that like I or my peers would have tried to get away with like maybe 3 years before this. This also seems a little retrograde for the trend. This, this like aggressively preppy story. Like even by 91, I think things were already starting to take a turn toward like not quite grunge, but like pre-grunge, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right. Then there's another like, hello, goodbyes. On page 94 that I guess is like bargains, relatively.
Yeah.
But what caught my eye was the pleated pleather shorts for winter. Like, they're just never going to stop fucking trying it with winter shorts, are they?
I did
it's been going on forever. Oh, so did I. I'm just saying.
Not with leather shorts.
Did you do it again?
Yeah, I probably did. There is, I would do like a, you know, if I had on a purple sweater, I would also do purple tights and then like cutoffs, like jean cutoffs over the tights.
Oh yeah. Okay.
But
I'm talking about like leather or like wool gab, like the kind in J. Crew that were like $550. And
we
sourced this from Italy. Like you sourced it from your butthole. Nobody's going to wear that in December.
In J. Crew, they'll also be like all over sequins or something where it's like, you can't do that. First of all, no one's going to take it. No dry cleaner's going to take it. And as soon as you sit down once, like half your butt is on that chair. Sorry.
Yeah. And the other half of the sequins are jammed into your ass. Like,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Speaking of no, there's a quite jarring transish between a fairly long, deeply reported steroids will kill you and your boy story. Like they sort of build to like, here's all the cosmetic reasons that steroids are bad. And also they're really not legal. And also they could kill you.
Yeah.
Literal smash cut page turn to yummy apple bread recipes are swell, ma. Like, guys, maybe just put an ad for like Partnership for a Drug-Free America. Just like give us a second before the recipes. None of which were for steroids, which seems like a missed opportunity. Just kidding. Don't do steroids. And then I suppose we must talk about the relating column because I was not sure how to feel about this advice to this young lady who is crushing on her cousin who lives nearby. How did you feel?
I think this is as even if you're going to take this question seriously and assume it's from a real person, which who knows? But
I mean,
let's pretend that it is.
We do kind of know, but let's pretend, yes.
Sure. For the sake of this discussion, I think if you're going to take this question seriously on its face, you can't be like, stop feeling this way. You can't date your cousin.
Right.
Because technically you can. I'm not saying you should, but like legally it's a gray area. Like even first cousins can get married in this country, I believe. Maybe not.
Hey, it was good enough for Giuliani.
Right. It was good enough for the Roosevelts. Maybe they were second. But anyway, like, I think this is good. It's like, you know, it would really fuck up your family if you tried to pursue anything with him. So keep that in mind and just try to get over him, which, yeah, sure. Like, if this is a letter from a 13-year-old being like, it's incest, stop it, be ashamed. That's not going to get you where you want to go. I think this is very sensitive.
Yeah, I thought it was actually good. I mean, if we accept that it's real, this was kind of the only possible path to take, which was like, first of all, like jealousy and territoriality are not confined to intimate relationships, which P.S. this cannot be for all the reasons that you already know. Like, I like that Kathy Hanauer doesn't go too hard against this possibly fictional person.
Yeah.
And that she manages to strike a good balance, especially when you're giving advice to adolescents who perhaps do not have the most perspective in the world, that it's both calm down, it's going to be fine, but also takes the concern seriously enough that it's like, I hear what you're saying, and I reflect back to you that this is like, you feel weird and scary, but like, just don't see him for a couple months.
Yeah.
Like, go to your bunk, think about staying, it's going to be fine. And like, that's a really critical balance that is very hard, I think, to get right. And I thought she did a good job. And I think sometimes we don't give 17 enough credit for doing things well because Sassy sort of elbowed in at around this time. It was like, no, this is how we actually live.
Yeah.
Which it like is, you know, that's a fair cop, but this was good, I thought.
Yeah. So we're going to close up with the quiz on page 28, is friend or foe, you laugh together, cry together, and you're the only ones who know about that awful spaghetti incident. How'd you get my spaghetti video? But how well do you really know your best friend? So the premise of this one is you take it for yourself. Then you take it for your friend, imagining the questions that, like, what she would say for each one, and then you compare notes to see how well you know each other, or how well each of you knows the other, I guess. And obviously we did this, and we put this last in case you want to be like, I don't need to hear how gross this is going to be when you all have the same answers for 50 to 75% of these, which is probably going to happen. So
I was like, that seems conservative to me. But then some of them are also like, they're from this teenage perspective that's like, I don't know how to even answer this for myself, much less how am I answering for an answer for me?
Yes.
I may have had to do it twice because I like... It just got like a third order question level, and I got confused.
All right, why don't we do this? Why don't we trade off? I'll do odds. You can do evens. Where we'll just read the question, and then you can say, "I picked this, and I thought you would say that or whatever."
Great. Okay.
And then trade off. Okay. But I agree with you. There's a few of these, and we'll flag them when we get to them. Where it's like I have to do like the neighborhood play of like what is the most similar thing to current reality.
What is the least repellent?
Yeah.
of these weird choices from 30 years ago.
All right. Question one: her interior decorating tastes run toward A, pastels and ruffles on the romantic side; B, minimalist and modern; C, earth tones and wood, sort of country; D, creative clutter, piles of old pizza boxes and last week's clothes all over the floor. I thought you would say B, minimalist and modern, which is also what I picked for myself.
I also had B for both of us.
All right. 1 point.
Yay.
Good start.
Okay. Question two. How often does she reinvent her image? A, nearly every day. You barely recognize her from week to week. B, every few months. C, around once a year. D, her look predates Nintendo. Oh boy, that is old. I had both of us having D for herself and each other.
Oh, I had C for both of us, around once a year.
Hmm.
No match.
Okay.
Three.
No
match. Her ultimate birthday gift would be A, dinner at a trendy bistro; B, tickets to a raging concert; C, a donation to her favorite cause; D, anything as long as it's clothes. I had D for you, and I had A for me.
I had D for both of us.
Oh, no match. Mm-hmm. Except I matched you, so we got that one right. Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Scoring. Question four. Protecting the environment is A, her number one concern. She's planning a career with Greenpeace. B, a big part of her life. She only buys recycled paper and never uses styrofoam. Kids, ask your parents. C, of marginal importance. She occasionally remembers to recycle her soda cans. And D, the environment. Were they on Club MTV? Ha. On the, like, grading on sort of the curve of how preeminent this concern was in everyone's life then compared to now, I answered B for myself and you.
I did as well. A match. All right, question five. If she could go anywhere in the world, she'd A, backpack through Europe; B, lie on a beach in the Caribbean; C, stick close to home, like the backyard; D, head for Disney World. I had close to home for you and beach for me.
Huh. I had close to home for, did I have close to home for both of us? No, I had D, head to Disney World for you and close to home for myself.
Okay. So I got that one right.
Six, her idea of a perfect date is A, an afternoon of blading in the park. B, spoiler, we both picked that one, just kidding. B, a loud dance party with lots of people. C, a foreign film followed by cappuccino. Remember when that was exotic? And D, front row at the Monster Truck show. So I had C for both of us.
Me as well. Seven, her ideal dinner is A, a huge Greek salad; B, lobster fra diavolo; C, pizza with everything; D, chocolate cake with chocolate ice cream. This was tough for me. I said C for myself, and then I wasn't sure because I know you like lobster, if you would go B. But I don't know if you like Fra Diavolo. I know you're a lobster roll guy. So I said C for me, pizza, and B for you, lobster.
I answered C for you and B for myself. Yay! So that's a match. 8. What is her best subject in school? A, English.
Stop.
B, science. C, history. D, lunch. Obviously, I had D for both of us. Just kidding. I had A for both of us.
Same. Question 9. Your friend thinks her best feature is her A, mouth, B, eyes, C, nose, D, glasses. Glasses sounds kind of insulting. But I did think about it because I know you were into glasses, but I had B for both of us. Eyes.
I had B for you, and then I thought you would pick D for me.
Oh.
And since you considered it, I'm willing to do that as a match.
No. I mean,
because they didn't have E legs, which is.
Thank you. See? That's what I would have picked.
See, we matched. I know. I'm giving that a double check. Fuck him in the ear.
All right.
Number 10. Her style of dress is A, cutting edge, B, casual, no frills, C, romantically inspired lace and velvet, D, individual, she loves to break the rules. I kind of hated this question and spent, I don't know, 10 minutes thinking about it and then threw up my hands. It was like D for both of us. At least that's kind of a compliment. So that's where I went.
Wow. I said casual for both of us, but I did consider D for you because of the dress over pants fondness. So I would say no match.
No.
Number 11. What word would she say fits her best? A, funny, duh. I feel like we don't need to read the rest of these, but they are sensitive of going perfect.
We're both so sensitive and perfect. Yes, I had A for both of us as well.
Nice.
Oh, this is a tough one. Mm. 12. She'd go into serious withdrawal if you took away her A, telephone, B, cross training shoes, C, Metallica CDs. Oh, bang your head, Tara. D, Thursday Beverly Hills 90210 sessions. How old is this quiz? It wasn't on Thursday after a while. Understanding that the telephone means something different from what it used to mean, I just put D for both of us for branding reasons.
I did too, but I thought about phone for a while.
I think about phone for both of us.
Am I more addicted to the TV than the phone? Obviously TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
13. What are her favorite type of books? A, 19th century classics. B, current bestsellers. C, science fiction or horror novels. D, cookbooks. So I took horror to encompass true crime. Mm-hmm. Which is why I said C for you and B for me.
That is what I had as well.
Nice.
Okay. Well, this is an unfortunate post-pandemic question, but here we go. 14. She'd never go out without her A, lipstick, B, mascara, C, blush, D, Blistex. I put A for you, and then I think you said B for me.
I said D for me and you.
Considered it. And what did you have for me, A?
I had D for both of us.
Oh. I mean, true.
Sorry.
Okay. No go.
Okay. 15. She'd be most likely to wear A, a baseball jersey, B, an Angora sweater, C, a big floppy hat, D, a small tasteful nose ring. So I had D for you.
Huh.
And A for me, because it's the closest thing to t-shirt.
Okay. I had you in an Angora sweater.
Huh.
And I thought that you would be torn between Angora and baseball for me. Mm. And then that you would say A, baseball jersey. So
no match.
This one was hard, and I'm not going to judge us for not getting that one right.
Yeah.
Number 16, if a guy asked her out and she already had plans with you, she'd A, tell him, sorry, some other time, B, tell you, sorry, some other time, C, do something with both of you, D, quote, forget she had plans with you. E should have been ditch you both and stay home to watch TV, in my opinion. But I had A for both of us.
Yep, me too, of course. 17. This was tough. What attracts her to a guy? A, a good body. B, a killer smile. C, beautiful eyes. D, an expensive car. I had C for me and B for you. So eyes for me, smile for you.
I had smile for you, killer body for me, or good body for me.
No match.
Yeah. This one was a little, whatever, teenager-y. The expensive car is so weird. Okay. 18. Her career plan might be to become a prominent lawyer. No Shando pronunciation. B, a Peace Corps worker. C, President of the United States. D, Christian Slater's personal assistant. I put A for both of us because it was just too weird.
C, I had A for you, so we I got that point. But for me, because it was the closest thing to the entertainment industry, I had D for me, Kristen Slater's personal assistant.
I thought about it.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, she's not the one who thinks he's cute, so...
True.
Should I make her the president? Like, neither of us wanted to be a Peace Corps worker. That was never in consideration. That's rather sad.
Or president.
Oh, God.
Oof. No thanks. 19. A, if she had a big problem, she'd A, ask for your advice right away. B, discuss it with anyone who'd listen. C, keep it to herself and think about it. D, go to her parents or a counselor at school. So I said... A, for myself, I would ask for your advice right away. And I thought you would keep it to yourself and think about it. C.
I had A for you. And then I thought about me, you would say C. Is that a match?
Yeah, we matched.
Okay.
We're killing this quiz.
Are we?
Final question.
I'm, of course, obsessing over the ones where it's like, we got that one wrong. It's a construction problem. Okay. 20. Who would she most want to meet? A, Barbara Bush. B, Diane Sawyer. C, Queen Latifah. D, Linda Barry. I had a moment's hesitation with this, but as we've learned in Learned League, sometimes you just got to go with your gut. So I put Queen Latifah for both of us.
Same.
Hey.
All right.
Dana Owens.
So I have 16. Which means, according to this quiz, we must be psychically linked, which, true.
Mm-hmm. It's either 14 or 15. I think I scored one of these backwards, but still.
Doesn't matter.
Still psychically linked.
As long as one of us is psychically linked to the other, I think that counts for both of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just need to rewrite these questions specifically for us, and then we can get perfect scores. I will write a letter and ask them to do so.
All right, well, I'll talk to you next week, Legs.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, episode 28. Let's watch Jason Priestley in Dear Christmas. Yes. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas to our
Merry
patrons
Christmas.
As well. Very festive, Sarah.
Sorry.
Thank you to all of our patrons for joining us today. It is Christmas Day as you hear this. We all know Jason Priestley has had a long and fruitful partnership with Lifetime, both as an actor and a director in both its adaptation of the lesser V.C. Andrews Heaven book series and directing past Christmas movies. But this year, the network put him opposite Melissa Joan Hart in Dear Christmas, in which he plays a dude with like 15 jobs, including such middle-aged lady catnip as sensitive country singer, rugged artisan, and firefighter. And she plays, wait for it, a podcaster. What were we going to do? Not watch it? Well, that might have been Sarah's preference, but I made her, so here we go. First of all, I just want to note that the couple who wrote it, Juliet and Keith Giglio, are from Manlius, a suburb of Syracuse. So shout out to our friend Kim, who lives like one town over from there. She may have seen them at Wegmans at some point. Hometown pride there. So the thumbnail of Dear Your Christmas is Natalie has a podcast about love. That's Melissa Joan Hart. Chris, Jason Priestley, is a tow truck driver, among his many other jobs. They keep crossing paths in Lake Tahoe, her hometown, where she is spending Christmas with her family. They like each other. Do they possibly love each other? Are things moving too fast? Turns out things are not moving too fast, and they both find love for Christmas. So now that our listeners have been assured that things work out, because I'm sure they were very worried about it, let us take a slightly slower walk through this affair, which, by the way, I just want to note, for listeners who are also listeners of the Extra Hot Great podcast, Dave and I watched it the night that we got drunk for the first time in 12 years. So I was taking notes. I think they were good.
Okay.
Dave was paying a little bit of attention, but I think he fell asleep for some of this.
That he was conscious at all is, frankly, a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. So Natalie's podcast. It's called Holiday Love. What does that mean? I don't know more than I after hearing this clip, but let's hear it anyway. Clip one.
In part one of this Dear Christmas episode, we explored all the trappings of the Christmas season. Cutting down the tree, drinking hot cocoa, putting up the lights, decorating the house, the ugly sweater party. It's the perfect backdrop to fall in love. But is it love or is it the season? Are you really falling in love or are you just in love with Christmas? Maybe when the snow melts, you'll fall out of love and it's over like a seasonal allergy. Holiday love is very complicated at Christmas. You can't just crack it that easily. That's why we're going to continue this episode next week, live.
Is this a whole podcast just about fucking on vacation? I seriously am asking.
Oh, that opens up a whole new world.
Okay, vacation, what did you think it was
vacation
about?
Vacation meaning of holiday. I thought that she was like poring over the calendar like, oh, Candlemas is a thing. National Pig Day, March 1st, in case anyone cares. Like, now that Hallmark has basically penetrated the entire calendar in every orifice with like multiple days that are like National Donut Hole Day. Oh, okay. So I thought it was that, but then this seems to have, I don't know if anyone listening to this would also have seen this notorious Buzz Bissinger versus Bob Costas thing on TV where Bob Costas repeatedly confused blogs and blog entries.
Uh-huh.
That seems to be, they do this on about blogs. That she's like, so I wrote this blog and then I wrote another blog. Like, yeah. That's not, then I am due a blog. Okay. Like, my dog understands how the internet works better than this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have a similar concept about podcasts and, like, going live and going viral. Like, mm-hmm. these are just, like, strings of words that they've heard next to each other before in regards to podcasts, which I think they may never have experienced before. Like, even her equipment looks suspect. Like, yeah. I mean, my assumption was that she just did love on Arbor Day or whatever.
Sure. Okay.
But I also, it just sort of betrays a complete lack of understanding. But also, like, this is never the point.
Right.
We've both been on Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean, and
yes,
their understanding of these, of really any workplace that is mm-hmm. not writing Hallmark movies is mm-hmm. none. So
yes, we should just clarify that is they talk about Hallmark movies. This is Lifetime movies, but this might as well be a Hallmark movie for how chaste it is. Like,
it really is. Although there are, you know, meta reasons for that, but we'll get into it later.
Right.
Or now.
I feel like they called the podcast Holiday Love. My theory is that the movie was originally supposed to be called Holiday Love. And then there already was one. So they had to demote the podcast to be called that, or, you know, that was just the peg. But again, as you say, they just did not think through, you know, that.
But
you,
then there's this whole other like literary device is, you know, actual literary devices are massing in front of my house right now for using that. But like that, it's like, dear Halloween, dear Thanksgiving, like conceit is the word I want. Thank you. So, but like, where does that come in? And what is the podcast actually called? And do you have seasons about holidays? And is the podcast actually called Dear Love?
Right.
And also, Hillary Burton was supposed to be in this.
She was in it.
When?
She was one of the testimonial givers.
Oh, she was?
Yeah. She was the one whose boyfriend was deployed, and then he was surprising her by he was going to come back and propose.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That I've always liked her, but that didn't go well.
No, it was not great
for her.
And I guess the guy was also from One Tree Hill, the boyfriend, but I didn't recognize him because I didn't watch that show. I only know her from White Collar.
Actually married to Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Like,
I know.
Do your girls a solid over here and get Denny the Ghost on camera, please.
Honestly.
Like he's doing anything else. Come on.
Okay, but whatever. Apparently our issues with holiday love as a podcast concept are immaterial because in the universe of the show, clip two.
You have the number one podcast in the country.
She has the number one podcast in the country, so what the fuck do we know? Nothing, apparently.
Yeah, I... Okay.
Whatever. I mean, there's doesn't matter.
There's so many... And they're just like, I don't know how it works, but it does. Like, you have the number one podcast in the country, and you don't know how it works.
Yeah.
And also, not that going viral was used correctly on any axis, but like if you're already the number one podcast in the country, this is like the great taste of Coke going viral. Like, oh, word, how do you pronounce this? Coke?
Yeah, Dave, even in his compromised state, when that line happened, was like, way to get some murder stories in your holiday love podcast in order to be the number one podcast in the country.
Seriously, Loveritos. Okay.
Yeah. So Natalie's boss, I guess, the owner of the podcast company that her podcast is on, is played by Robin Givens. Her name is Penny. And Dave had a note about her attire for the Christmas party. He is messing with his camera and his phone right now, so I will just relay it in his stead, which is, if she's the boss and she's dressing up for the holidays, she should be in a Santa costume, not dressed as an elf, as she is. He thought elf was not sufficiently authoritative for someone in her position, or that was my understanding.
No, because Santa's the boss, and she's the boss, and she's not an underling as an elf. That's why.
I see.
Employer-employee relationship.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, but that could be like a, you know, no one can really utter the name of Yahweh. Like, no one can know the true nature of Yahweh. Yahweh is just a substitute for the unknowable face of the deity, and maybe that's her take on Santa.
Yeah, that's probably what? It.
That's not it.
Okay, moving on to Natalie and Chris's Meet Cute But Not Really. So this production is larding on the signifiers of middle-aged virility that are supposed to be irresistible to middle-aged women. And in case we weren't sure, the score alerts us. This is what we hear when Chris shows up to help Natalie with her car because she's had a tire blowout on her way from Chicago. That's where she was, right? Yeah, Chicago to Lake Tahoe. Clip three.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, hello.
I mean, and he's in slow-mo.
Yes. While she's
this
observing.
This might have been my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. It was cute.
Yeah.
He doesn't, I mean, he doesn't look bad.
No, he looks fine. He looks his age. There's one scene where, oh God, talk about signifiers, but they're doing some glass blowing in what I believe was the 14th or 15th montage.
Yes.
of a standard 2-hour runtime. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm complaining. And he was like bending over the blow poke, whatever this tool is called. And it was not a great angle on the remains of the shelf. But, you know, I don't look like I did in 94 either. And that's good and bad.
So her not knowing what he means when he asks her for her spare when he's there to change her blowing out tire is a little much. Like, we get it. She's a woman and she's from the city. Like, calm down, movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, they sort of banter back and forth. It's like, fine. She gets the impression that he's super into Christmas because while he's changing the tire, she goes and sits in the cab of his truck and there's, you know, pictures and stuff. He's got cocoa, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then they do this bit. Clip 4.
I'll see you tomorrow.
You sound pretty sure about that.
Pretty sure.
So they do this at the end of each day. Is this maybe sort of a cute runner? I'm sorry. Maybe I was like Stockholm syndromed by this point, but I thought it was sort of sweet.
I also thought it was sort of sweet, and his delivery of it, like, I have to tell you that I don't think these two people had any chemistry beyond longtime performers and sort of former teen stars.
Agree.
And franchise anchors.
Yes.
Kind of occupying the same space and understanding what's expected of them. I feel as though, much as in the BH90210 project, that they could have leaned way harder into Priestley's evident willingness to send himself up and evident understanding of what he's there to do in a project like this.
Yeah.
Which is be Brandon.
Yeah.
30 years later or 25 years later.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. They did not have chemistry. I put that mostly on her. She was not good.
Yeah. I mean, she's, you know, she's not. Also, I mean, so much of this is like they don't have chemistry and I don't think they would. But like everyone often seemed to be in different movies. And I think much of that is down to social distancing changes that had to be made.
Right.
Ed Begley Jr. is like, I don't know what he thinks he's doing. He's doing a lot of it and he seems to be extremely content with the results. Uh-huh. I don't get it, but it was like fascinating.
Well, I can tell you. He was playing the same role that he played on Bless This Mess. He is Randy. In that, he was Rudy. So it's like basically the same. But in that, he was supposed to be like a kind of on the fringes of society. Like he literally lived in a barn. His best friend was a goat. Like he had lost all of his money. He was, you know, he was troubled. And here he's supposed to be a functioning dad. He plays Melissa Joan Hart's dad. Who, you know, is retired and has just opened a bookstore with his wife, who he's still like super in love with. And that's like another part of the story that, you know, part of why Natalie's never found love is that she's never found someone that she loves as much as her parents love each other, blah, 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 which is always the case in these movies, too.
Yeah.
But he basically is playing the exact same part. And it was weird. Like, you know, maybe he downshifted, like he's like, I'll just do the same thing. No one watched that show, which is true. No one did. That's why it got canceled, except me, which is why I could recognize it was the exact same characterization.
Well, and I think he also on some level understands that it doesn't matter that he needed another take.
Yeah.
But there is really a lot of because there has to be so much literal air between the performers in this, there is like no air in the scenes at all.
Yes.
Within each scene, it's just like Mark, line, Mark, line. Priestley's okay.
Yeah.
The woman playing the sister is pretty good. Like, I kind of wish the movie were about her, even though her husband got totally Chrissy Snowed off screen for 90% of it.
He did.
Because COVID.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it just, maybe it wouldn't have been true if there were more than 6 people that they could have on screen at any given time, closer than 6 feet apart. But
yeah,
I don't think so. I just think everybody was, I don't know, coasting a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should talk about the COVID requirements because I linked an article in our doc to how the couple that wrote it had to change it from the original concept. Like there was going to be a run in it, like a 5K, which was modeled on one that they actually did or whatever. And then, you know, when they decided they were going to shoot it this year, obviously changes had to be made to what they could do. And so there are, like, for example, references to a party, but we'll only ever see it happening like they're outside and the party's inside and they're just making s'mores or like go to the restaurant and drop this off. But it's, you know, the restaurant's not open yet. No one's there or whatever. It's like stuff like that.
Right. I missed the fireman's ball. So it'll be just the two of us dancing like, OK.
Right. And, you know, once I knew that, it made more sense. Some of it. But that doesn't that explains why changes were made to the shooting. But it also just makes you as a viewer watching it think like, okay, when is it in the world of the movie? Because when we see Natalie's award, it's for 2020. She's won a podcast award and it says it was a 2020 award, which is like, okay, fine. It's like 2020 or later.
Okay.
But then there's a reference to like Jimmy Fallon had a book signing at Mom and Dad's brand new bookstore. Like, did he? Because they opened it this year. Like, don't think so.
That would be illegal.
Right. And, you know, there are several references to things being done or given or whatever to, like, the nurses and the first responders. So, like, that's obviously a nod.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, like, people are out. It's Christmas time and no one is in masks. So it's not 2020. So I hope it better not be. So, you know, maybe it's 2021 or later, but it's still just very jarring where it's like, just don't say it at all. Just pretend it's 2019. You can still take the precautions or, you know, do those things with the shooting without calling it out in a way that we would notice because we do.
Yeah, I forget where I was reading this, maybe in something on about something else on Decider.com, but just talking about how the decision always has to be made, like, if you are going to locate something in time, like, they're trying not to do that as much as possible because it's either, especially in a property like this, like, it's just upsetting, I guess, and not on brand.
Yep.
And I get it, but, like, we all can look at the guide and see when it was made.
Right.
So just say it's in 2019. Is a good solution, or because this bears no relationship to like podcasts as we understand them,
right?
Blogs as we understand them,
yeah.
Like people having angsty conversations, plural, about whether they're in love when they have not touched tongues, which is normal for this like Hallmark Lifetime movie universe, but not normal for most civilians that it's like, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just didn't even grading on the curve of various like COVID shooting protocols. The fact that these movies are like rated G and supposed to be for families, that Ed Begley is Ed Begley. I mean, and drives a car that runs on plastic bags. Like, it just does not, it didn't work still.
Yeah. I mean, at least they didn't have to do what the Ali Stroker one did, which is like kiss with a piece of plastic between them, which like notoriously that's what happened on that one.
Wait, on which one?
One that starred Ali Stroker, who was in the Oklahoma on Broadway recently.
Oh, okay.
That's what they did.
Dental dam.
No, like a sheet of plastic. Like, you know, when you go to CVS and you check out, like a sheet of plastic. Yeah, look it up.
And then they just edited that out?
Yeah. Or they shot it like in ways so you couldn't see it. But there are photos of them on the set where you can see the two of them like kissing this piece of plastic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, I mean,
just say, I have a cold sore.
God, I think everyone involved really did their best.
Yeah.
There were parts of this that I, you know, I wanted to like it because I had to watch it. But
yes,
you know, there were things that could have been done, like the testimonials. Actually, I thought that the Hillary Burton one, like having not recognized her, I thought that was the garbagiest one. And I was like, are those civilians? Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not, like, literally, but
Right. Well, they also had Doug and Jamie from Married at First Sight season one. I was excited to see them. But
well,
I also,
the one.
every time Natalie's iPad pinged and she was like, oh, another testimonial. It's like, how do you know it's Christmas? Like, how do you know it's not just your 15th Gap sale email of the day?
Like, yeah. And shouldn't you be getting more of these if you have right. the number one podcast in British yeah. Columbia?
Right. All right. So Chris has many other jobs. He's a Christmas decoration hanger, which Natalie gets roped into helping him with, which, like, is for, you know, building chemistry reasons. But if we've paid you to do this job, I'm not helping. Sorry. This is also when we learn he remembers her from childhood and she does not remember him at all. And when she gets home, she sets off on a quest to find her diary from eighth grade, which is the year they were in school together. And every time he said eighth grade, I was like, it sounds so weird coming out of you because I know you're Canadian. Yeah. You want to say grade eight.
You want to say grade eight.
But in the course of this, we also learn how she has churned through crushes throughout her life. And one of his other jobs is also Christmas karaoke leader, which is when we get to hear him sing clip five.
No.
So, yeah, that's
so,
like, not remotely the same voice.
Well, and find a different way to fit in, because that's her favorite Christmas song, apparently. Like, find another way to get there. Especially
right.
since Priestley, I think, as a result of that very serious accident that he had, like, his voice is different.
Yeah.
From really what it was.
Right. Yeah. I had to search to find the sub voice guy's name. It's Chris Klein, K-L-I-N-E, not Chris Klein from the notorious Mamma Mia audition video.
Oh,
look
my
it
God,
up if you
if
haven't.
Only. I would have believed you if you'd said that that was him.
I wish. So it's after this we get another kind of cute moment between Natalie and Chris where she's like, I should do some work. And he's like, yeah, same. And then there's a hard cut to the two of them sitting in this apparently closed restaurant drinking and chatting because it is hard to motivate yourself to work in the week before Christmas, even when you know you should. And they do this again with the sister where the sister's like, do you want to come shopping? And she's like, I should do some work. So, yes. Like, like, these are the small moments that I have to seize on because it is mostly very dumb.
Yeah.
Again, the sister, she's played by Nikki Whalen. She looks exactly like a young Josie Bassett to me, I thought. What did you think?
She really does. She really does. Yeah, she is feasting while there's feast to be had. And I'm into it. And she's also in the, like, you know, my baby's due on Christmas Eve, but it definitely won't come before then.
Yeah.
Ow. Like, guys.
Yeah.
But she's good.
She was good. Yeah. They had the other runner with her was that she keeps trying to tell her romantic story of how she met her husband. And, like, he's an accountant. She was getting audited. And, like, she keeps trying to explain this story of, like, he was looking after me, even though their story is, like, kind of dry the way she tells it. And she's at the end of every version of it, she's like, you can use that. And Natalie's like, maybe. And then at the end, when she's doing her live podcast, she does. And then her sister's like, we made the podcast. It's very cute.
And then they high five. So this has obviously been a runner with the husband. Like, at least that character was thought out. I was like, just have it be about her, please.
Yes. So
no.
Baby versus ball. He invites her to the fireman's ball. I admire that he just, when they were having drinks and they established they actually do have things in common, like they've both traveled a lot and to a lot of the same places, which is, like, more than a lot of these movies do or bother
sure.
to. He just straight up is like, what's your situation? Which, again, is more than the Hallmark movies certainly do, where they have to, like, dance around it. So he asks her to this ball, and then her sister goes into labor, of course. And then she shows up, as we've said. after it's already over because they can't have a ball full of people. And so the two of them dance. These two, like, when you're fitting actors for formal wear that they're going to have to wear with their mic packs, have them wear their mic packs when you fit them, because otherwise it looks terrible. And it did. Yeah. I felt bad for them.
I mean, I appreciate that. I think Melissa Joan Hart has a normal non-X-ray body.
She does.
But this particular, like, I would not be trying strapless.
No.
At our age range.
She's 45. So she's, she's my age.
Yeah. And I, definitely not with a mic pack. And also, like, it's a Christmas movie. Like, go to David's Bridal and have some other options for this. Maybe an Empire waist. Maybe
perhaps
not this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad. I mean, that is a nice color on her, but oof.
Mm-hmm. And then the next day, because of, again, COVID restrictions, because they can't shoot in a hospital, she has to go see Chris before she goes to the hospital to see her only sister and first nephew. So then it just makes her look like a shitty sister.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now that I know why, it makes more sense, but it's still annoying. And then the complication has to be, is this going too fast? Which, you know, fine. This is what it always is, I feel like.
Yeah. But I mean, yes, it is. Try Frenching. See if you like it. If
but
you don't,
yes, it is. It's been like 4 days. Like, no.
Yeah.
And we see that, you know, when they have this conversation where she's like, I think it is too fast. And then he goes to his truck and he has a ring and it's like, Jesus Christ, which, like, OK, so then there's the resolution. It's her live podcast, which, like, I was mad about this. And then I remembered, oh, Slash Film does live podcasts, too. They do it on YouTube sometimes, or Periscope or whatever. So, like, this is a thing that happens. Fine. Natalie declares herself. Chris hears. And we all see that in her diary, which Randy found, it's NM plus CM with star stickers all around it. And it's a callback to a Shooting Star, which was her parents' love story, blah, blah, blah. So he comes back. They say they're I love yous. He gives her the ring. And it's like, he specifically is like, it is not an engagement ring, which I feel like someone on set was like, you have to say this. They have not even kissed.
Yeah.
So, like,
seriously.
Thank
also,
you.
That ring is a hunker.
Yeah. Crazy.
Like, that's some 5-digit sapphire action.
Yeah. But, you know, he's loved her since he was in 8th grade with her, / grade 8, I guess. Always.
Across borders, across time.
He seems pretty confident that it doesn't matter where they're going to end up, even though she lives in Chicago and he lives in Lake Tahoe with 15 jobs and a niece and nephew that he might financially support. We haven't even talked about them, but that's it. So it's not the worst. It's not the best. He was good. She was not great. The supporting cast, I thought, was quite strong. And given the COVID restrictions, like, other than making it weird that it seems like it's supposed to be 2020, even though it's not 2020 safety in the way people are actually acting as people in this world, it was fine.
He was good. I would watch something like this with him in it again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's what we do, is watch things with him in it. But it's like, I wouldn't be bracing for horrible impact. This just felt like the production never quite caught, like the gears never quite caught, just because of all the COVID stuff. Like, everybody was thrown off.
Yeah.
And also, she's acting like she's in an instructional, like, workplace safety video.
She's real stiff. Like, he seems to just have a kind of goofy, this is a lark energy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's acting like this could be my big break. And it's like, it's not. Like, just relax.
Yeah. Like, hey, Sabrina, you're good. Mm-hmm. Bank the residuals, deep breaths. It's going to be fine.
I wonder how people are reacting to this episode of our Patreon, though. Dave, clip 6.
The podcast has already gone viral.
Awesome.
Finally.